Edmund and Mill Kemper III, the co-ed killer, the co-ed butcher, and the ogre of Aptos. He is an American serial killer and necrophile who murdered 10 people, including his paternal grandparents and mother. He is noted for his large size at 6 feet 9 inches and his high intellect, possessing an IQ of 145. Kemper is known for killing 10 victims, including his paternal grandparents and mother. Born in California, Kemper had a disturbing upbringing. His parents divorced and he moved to Montana with his abusive mother. He returned to California at the age of 15, where he murdered his paternal grandparents. He was diagnosed as a paranoid schizophrenic by a psychiatrist and sentenced to Atascadero State Hospital as a criminally insane juvenile. Released by the age of 21, after convincing psychiatrists he was rehabilitated, Kemper was regarded as non-threatening by his future victims. He targeted young female hitchhikers during his killing spree, luring them into a vehicle and driving them to secluded areas where he would murder them before taking the corpses back home to be decapitated, dismembered, and violated. Kemper then murdered his mother and one of her friends before turning himself into authorities. Found sane and guilty at his trial in 1973, Kemper requested the death penalty for his crimes. Since capital punishment was suspended in California at the time, he instead was given 8 concurrent life sentences. Since then, he's been incarcerated in California Medical Facility. Kemper has waived his right to a parole hearing several times, and he said he's happy to be in prison. This is Edmund Kemper's story. Kemper was born in Burbank, California on December 18, 1948. He was the middle child and the only son to Clarinelle Elizabeth Kemper and Edmund Emil Kemper II. Edmund II was a World War II veteran who, after the war, tested nuclear weapons in Pacific Proving Grounds before returning to California, where he worked as an electrician. Clarinelle often complained about Edmund II's menial electrician job. And he later said suicide missions in wartime and the atomic bomb testings were nothing compared to living with her, and that Clarinelle often affected him more than 396 days and nights of fighting on the front did. Weighing 13 pounds as a newborn, Kemper was a head taller than his peers by the age of 4. Early on, he exhibited antisocial behavior such as cruelty to animals. At the age of 10, he buried a pet cat alive. Once it died, he dug it up, decapitated it, and mounted its head on a spike. Kemper later stated he derived pleasure from successfully lying to his family about killing the cat. At age 13, he killed another family cat when he perceived it to be favoring his younger sister, Alin Lee Kemper, over him, and kept pieces of it in his closet until his mother found them. Kemper had a dark fantasy life. He performed rituals with his younger sister's dolls that culminated in him removing their heads and hands. And on one occasion, when his elder sister, Susan Hewley Kemper, teased him and asked him why he did not try to kiss his teacher, he replied, "If I kiss her, I'd have to kill her first." He also recalled that as a young boy, he would sneak out of his house, armed with his father's bayonet, go to his second grade teacher's house to watch her through the windows. He stated in later interviews that some of his favorite games to play as a child were gas chamber and electric chair, in which he asked his younger sister to tie him up, flip an imaginary switch, and then he would tumble over and writhe on the floor pretending that he was being executed by gas inhalation or electric shock. He also had a near-death experiences as a child. Once when his sister tried to push him in front of a train, and another when she successfully pushed him into the deep end of a swimming pool where he almost drowned. Kemper had a close relationship with his father and was devastated when his parents separated in 1957, causing him to be raised by Clarinelle in Helena, Montana. He had a severely dysfunctional relationship with his mother, a neurotic, domineering alcoholic who would frequently belittle, humiliate, and abuse him. Clarinelle often made her son sleep in the locked basement because she feared that he would harm his sisters. Regularly mocked him for his size, because he stood 6 feet 4 inches by the age of 15, and derided him as a real weirdo. She also refused to show him affection out of fear that it would turn him gay. and told young Kemper that he reminded her of his father and that no woman would ever love him. Kemper later described her as a sick, angry woman, and it has been postulated that she suffered from borderline personality disorder. At age 14, Kemper ran away from home in an attempt to reconcile with his father in Van Nuys, California. Once there, he learned his father had remarried and had a stepson. Kemper stayed with his father for a short while until the elder Kemper sent him to live with his paternal grandparents, who lived on a ranch in the mountains of North Fork. Kemper hated living in North Fork. He described his grandfather as senile, and his grandmother was constantly emasculating me and my grandfather. On August 27, 1964, Kemper was sitting at the kitchen table with his grandmother, Maud Matilda Huey Kemper, when they had an argument. Enraged, Kemper stormed off, retrieved the rifle that his grandfather had given him for hunting. He then re-entered the kitchen and fatally shot his grandmother in the head before firing twice more into her back. Some accounts mention that she also suffered multiple post-mortem stab wounds from a kitchen knife. When Kemper's grandfather, Edmund Emil Kemper, returned from the grocery shopping, Kemper went outside and fatally shot him in the driveway. He was unsure what to do next, so he phoned his mother, who told him to contact local police. Kemper called the police and waited to be taken into custody. After his arrest, Kemper said he just wanted to see what it felt like to kill Grandma, and testified that he killed his grandfather so he would not have to find out that his wife was dead. Psychiatrist Donald Lundy, who interviewed Kemper at length during adulthood, wrote that with these murders, in his way, he had avenged rejection of both his father and mother. Kemper's crimes were deemed incomprehensible for a 15-year-old to commit, and court psychiatrists diagnosed him as a paranoid schizophrenic before sending him to Atascadero State Hospital, a maximum security facility that houses mentally ill convicts. At the hospital, California Youth Authority psychiatrists and social workers disagreed with the court psychiatrist's diagnosis. Their report stated that Kemper showed no flight of ideas, no interferences with thought, no expression of delusions or hallucinations, and no evidence of bizarre thinking. They also observed him to be intelligent and introspective, initially testing him and measuring his IQ at 136. That's over 2 standard deviations above average. He was re-diagnosed with a less severe condition, a personality trait disturbance, passive-aggressive type. Later on in his time at the hospital, Kemper was given another IQ test, which he was given a high result of 145. Kemper endeared himself to his psychiatrist by being a model prisoner and was trained to administer psychiatric tests to other inmates. One of his psychiatrists later said, "He was a very good worker, and this is not typical for a sociopath. He really took pride in his work." Kemper also became a member of the JCs while in Atascadero, I know I keep butchering that name, and said he developed some new tests and some new scales on the Minnesota Multiphasic Personality Inventory, specifically an over-hostility scale during his work with the hospital psychiatrist. After his second arrest, Kemper said that being able to understand how these tests functioned allowed him to manipulate his psychiatrist, and admitted that he learned a lot from sex offenders to whom he administered tests. For example, they told him it was best to kill a woman after raping her to avoid leaving witnesses. On December 18, 1969, his 21st birthday, Kemper was released on parole from the hospital against the recommendations of psychiatrists at the hospital. He was released into the care of his mother, Clarinelle, who had remarried, taking the surname Strandberg, and then divorced again in Aptos, California, a short drive from where she worked as administrative assistant at the University of California, Santa Cruz. Kemper later demonstrated further to his psychiatrist that he was rehabilitated, and on November 29, 1972, his juvenile records were permanently expunged. The last report from his probation officer psychiatrist reads, "If I were to see this patient without having any history or available of getting any history of him, I would think they were dealing with a very well-adjusted young man who had initiative, intelligence, and who was free of any psychiatric illness. It is my opinion that he made a very excellent response to the years of treatment and rehabilitation, and I would see no psychiatric reason to consider him to be any danger to himself or any member of society. And since it may allow him more freedom as an adult to develop his potential, I would consider it reasonable to have a permanent expunction of his juvenile records. While staying with his mother, Kemper attended community college in accordance with his parole requirements and had hoped he would become a police officer, but was rejected because of his size. At the time of his release from the hospital, Kemper stood 6 feet 9 inches, which led to his nickname Big Ed Kemper. Kemper maintained relationships with Santa Cruz police officers despite his rejection and joined the force and became self-described as a friendly nuisance. At a bar called the Jury Room, which was a popular hangout for local law enforcement, Kemper worked a series of menial jobs before gaining employment with the State California Division of Highways, known as the California Department of Transportation. During this time, his relationship with Clarnell remained toxic and hostile, with them having frequent arguments that their neighbors often overheard. Kemper later described the arguments he had with his mother at the time, stating, "My mother and I started right in the horrendous battles, just horrible battles, violent and vicious. I've never been in such vicious verbal battles with anyone. It would go to fists with a man, but this was my mother, and I couldn't stand the thought of my mother and I doing these things. She insisted on it and just over stupid things. I remember one roof raiser was over whether I should have my teeth cleaned." When he had saved enough money, Kemper moved out to live with a friend in Alameda. There he still complained of being unable to get away from his mother, since she regularly phoned him and paid him surprise visits. He often had financial difficulties, which resulted in him frequently returning to his mother's apartment in Aptos. At a Santa Cruz beach, Kemper met a student from Turlock High School to whom he became engaged in March 1973. The engagement was broken off after Kemper's second arrest, and his fiancée's parents requested her name not be revealed to the public. "I have dug and dug, and I have not found this woman's name anywhere." The same year he began working for the Highway Division, Kemper was hit by a car while riding a motorcycle that he had recently purchased. His arm was badly injured in the crash and received $15,000, which in today's market is about $90,000 settlement in the civil suit he filed against the car driver. As he was driving around in 1969 Ford Galaxy he bought with a part of the settlement money, he noticed a large number of young women hitchhiking and began storing plastic bags, knives, blankets, and handcuffs in his car. He then began picking up young women and peacefully letting them go, according to Kemper. He picked up around 150 such hitchhikers before he felt homicidal sexual urges, which he called his little zapples, and began acting on them. Between May 1972 and April 1973, Kemper killed 8 people. He would pick up female students who were hitchhiking and take them to isolated areas where he would shoot, stab, smother, and strangle them. He would then take their bodies back home where he would decapitate and perform fellatio on their severed heads, have sexual intercourse with the corpses, and dismember them. During his 11-month murder spree, he killed 5 college students, 1 high school student, his mother, and his mother's best friend. Kemper has stated in interviews that he would often go out in search of victims after having arguments with his mother, and that she refused to introduce him to women attending the college where she worked. He recalled, she would say, "You're just like your father. You don't deserve to get to know them." Psychiatrist and Kemper himself has espoused the belief that the young women were surrogates for his ultimate target, his mother. On May 7, 1972, Kemper was driving in Berkeley when he picked up 2 18-year-old hitchhikers from Fresno State students, Mary Ann Pesks and Anita Mary Lachesa, on the pretext of taking them to Stanford University. After driving for an hour, he managed to reach a secluded wooded area near Alameda, in which he was familiar from his work at the highway department. Without alerting his passengers that he had changed directions from where they wanted to go, He handcuffed Pesk and locked Luchessa in the trunk, then stabbed and strangled Pesk to death before killing Luchessa in the same manner. Kemper later confessed that while handcuffing Pesk, he brushed the back of his hand against one of her breasts, and it embarrassed him, adding that he said, "Whoops, I'm sorry," or something like that, after grazing her breast, despite murdering her minutes later. Kemper put both of the women's bodies in the trunk of his Ford Galaxy, returned to his apartment. He was stopped on the way by a police officer for having a broken taillight, but the officer did not detect the corpses in the car. Kemper's roommate was not home, so he took the bodies into the apartment, where he took photographs of them and had sexual intercourse with them, and then dismembered them. He then put the body parts in plastic bags, where he later abandoned them near Loma Prieta Mountain, before disposing of Peaks and Luchessa's heads in a ravine. Kemper engaged in fellatio with both of them in August. In August, Pesk's skull was found in Loma Prieta Mountain. An extensive search failed to turn up the rest of Pesk's remains or any trace of Luchessa. On the evening of September 14, 1972, Kemper picked up a 15-year-old dance student named Aiko Ku, who had decided to hitchhike to a dance class after missing her bus. He again drove to a remote area where he pulled a gun on Ku before accidentally locking himself out of the car. However, Ku let him back inside as he had previously gained the 15-year-old's trust while holding her at gunpoint. Back inside the car, he proceeded to choke her unconscious, rape, and kill her. Kemper subsequently packed Ku's body into the trunk of his car, went to a nearby bar to have a few drinks before returning to his apartment. He later confessed that after exiting the bar, he opened the trunk of the car, admiring his catch like a fisherman. Back at his apartment, he had sexual intercourse with the corpse before dismembering and disposing the remains in a similar manner as his previous two victims. Ku's mother called the police to report the disappearance of her daughter and put up hundreds of flyers asking for information, but did not receive any responses regarding her daughter's location or status. On January 7, 1973, Kemper, who had moved back in with his mother, was driving around Cabrillo College campus when he picked up 18-year-old student Cynthia Ann Cindy Shaw. He drove to a sequestered wooded area and fatally shot her with a .22 caliber pistol. He then placed her body in the trunk of his car and drove to his mother's house, where he kept the body hidden in a closet in his room overnight. When his mother left for work the next morning, he had sexual intercourse with and removed the bullet of Shaw's corpse before dismembering and decapitating her in the mother's bathtub. Kemper kept Shaw's severed head for several days, regularly engaging in fellatio with it before burying it in his mother's garden, facing upward toward the bedroom. After his arrest, he stated that he did this because his mother always wanted people to look up to her. He discarded the rest of Shaw's remains by throwing them off a cliff. Over the course of the following weeks, all but her head and right hand were discovered and pieced together like a macabre jigsaw puzzle. A pathologist determined that Shaw had been cut into pieces with a power saw. On February 5, 1973, after a heated argument with his mother, Kemper left his house in search of possible victims, with heightened suspicion of serial killer preying on hitchhikers in Santa Cruz area. Students were advised to only accept rides from cars with university stickers on them. Kemper had such a sticker as his mother worked at the University of California, Santa Cruz. He encountered 23-year-old Rosalind Heather Thorpe and 20-year-old Alice Helen Allison Liu on the USCS campus. According to Kemper, Thorpe entered his car first, who reassured Liu to also enter. He then fatally shot Thorpe and Liu with his .22 caliber pistol and wrapped their bodies in blankets. Kemper again brought the victims back to his mother's house. This time he beheaded them in his car and carried the headless corpses into his mother's house to have sexual intercourse with them. He then dismembered the bodies, removed the bullets to prevent identification, and the next morning discarded the remains. Some remains were found at the Eden Canyon a week later, and more were found near Highway 1 in March. When questioned in an interview as to why he decapitated his victims, he explained, "The head trip fantasies were a bit like a trophy. You know, the head is where everything is at, the brains, the eyes, the mouth. That's the person. I remember being told as a kid, you cut off the head and the body dies. The body is nothing without the head." Well, that's not quite true. There's a lot left in a girl's body without the head. On April 20th, 1973, after coming home from a party, 52-year-old Clarinelle Elizabeth Strandberg awakened her son with her arrival. While sitting in her bed reading, she noticed Kemper enter her room and said, "Tim, I suppose you want to sit up and talk all night now." Kemper replied, "No, good night," and then he waited for her to fall asleep before returning to bludgeon her with a claw hammer and slit her throat with a knife. He subsequently decapitated her and engaged in fellatio with her severed head before using it as a dartboard. Kemper stated that he put her head on a shelf and screamed at it for an hour and threw darts at it and ultimately smashed her face in. He also cut out her tongue and larynx and put them in the garbage disposal. However, the garbage disposal could not break down the tough vocal cords and ejected the tissue back into the sink. "That seemed appropriate," Kemper later said, "as much as she'd bitched and screamed and yelled at me over so many years." Kemper then hid his mother's corpse in a closet and went out to a drink at a nearby bar. Upon his return, he invited his mother's best friend, 59-year-old Sarah Taylor Sally Hallett, over to his house to have dinner and watch a movie. When Hallett arrived, Kemper strangled her to death to create a cover story that his mother and Hallett had gone away together on vacation. He subsequently put Hallett's corpse in a closet, obscured any outward signs of a disturbance, and left a note to the police. It read, "Approximately 5:15 a.m. Saturday, no need for her to suffer anymore at the hands of this horrible, murderous butcher. It was quick, asleep, the way I wanted it, not sloppy, incomplete, gents. Just a lack of time. I got things to do," with several exclamation points. Afterwards, Kemper fled the scene. He drove nonstop to Pueblo, California, taking caffeine pills to stay awake for the 1,000-mile journey. He had 3 guns and hundreds of rounds of ammunition in his car and believed he was a target of an active manhunt. After not hearing any news on the radio about the murders of his mother and Hallett, when he arrived at Pueblo, he found a phone booth and called the police. He confessed to the murders of his mother and Hallett, but the police did not take the call seriously and told him to call back at a later time. Several hours later, Kemper called again, asking to speak to an officer he personally knew. He confessed to the officer of the killing of his mother and Hallett and waited for the police to arrive and take him into custody, where he also confessed to the murders of 6 students. When asked in a later interview why he turned himself in, Kemper said the original purpose was gone. It wasn't serving any physical or real emotional purpose. It was just a pure waste of time. Emotionally, I couldn't handle it much longer. Toward the end there, I started feeling the folly of the whole damn thing. And at the point of it, near exhaustion, near collapse, I just said to hell with it and called it all off. Kemper was indicted on 8 counts of first-degree murder on May 7, 1973. He was assigned to the Chief Public Defender of Santa Cruz County, Attorney Jim Jackson, due to Kemper's explicit and detailed confession. His counsel's only option was to plead not guilty by reason of insanity to the charges. Kemper tried twice to commit suicide in custody. His trial went ahead on October 23, 1973. Three court-appointed psychiatrists found Kemper to be legally sane. One of the psychiatrists, Dr. Joel Fort, investigated his juvenile records and the diagnosis that he was once psychotic. Fort also interviewed Kemper, including under truth serum, and relayed to the court that Kemper had engaged in cannibalism, alleging that he sliced fresh flesh from his legs of his victims, then cooked and consumed 3 strips of flesh in a casserole. Nevertheless, Fort determined that Kemper was fully aware in each case, and stated Kemper enjoyed the prospect of the infamy associated with being labeled a murderer. Kemper later recanted the confession of cannibalism. California held that the defendant to establish a defense on the ground of insanity, it must be clearly proved that at the time of committing the act, the party accused was laboring under such a defeat of reason from disease of mind and not to know the nature and quality of the act he was doing, or if he did know that he did not know what he was doing was wrong. Kemper appeared to have known the nature of the acts was wrong and had shown signs of a malice aforethought. On November 1st, Kemper took the stand. He testified that he killed the victims because he wanted them for myself, like possessions, and attempted to convince the jury that he was insane based on reasoning that his actions could only have been committed by someone with an aberrant mind. He said two beings inhabited his body, and when the killer personality took over, it was kind of like blacking out. On November 8, 1973, the six-man, six-woman jury deliberated for 5 hours before declaring Kemper sane and guilty of all counts. He asked for the death penalty, requesting death by torture. However, due to the Supreme Court putting a stop on the death penalty in California, he instead received 7 years to life for each count, with these terms to be served concurrently, and was sentenced to California Medical Facility. In the California Medical Facility, Kemper was incarcerated in the same prison block as other notorious criminals, such as Herbert Mullen and Charles Manson. Kemper showed particular disdain for Mullen, who committed his murders at the same time in the same area as Kemper. He described Mullen as just a cold-blooded killer, killing everybody he saw for no good reason. Kemper manipulated and physically intimidated Mullen, who was 5'7" and was more than a foot shorter than he. Kemper stated that Mullen had a habit of singing and bothering people when somebody tried to watch TV, so I threw water on him to shut him up. Then when he was a good boy, I'd give him peanuts. Herbert liked peanuts, and that was effective because pretty soon he asked permission to sing. That's called behavior modification treatment. Kemper remains among the general population in the prison and is considered a model prisoner. He was in charge of scheduling other inmates' appointments with psychiatrists and was an accomplished craftsman of ceramic cups. He was also a prolific reader of books and tape for the blind. In 1987, Los Angeles Times article stated he was the coordinator of the prison's program and had personally spent over 5,000 hours narrating books and several hundred completed recordings to his name. He is retired from this position in 2015 after he experienced a stroke and was declared medically disabled. He received his first rules violation report in 2016 after failing to provide a urine sample. While in prison, Kemper has participated in a number of interviews, including a segment in 1982 documentary, The Killing of America, as well as an appearance in 1984 documentary, Murder, No Apparent Motive. His interviews have contributed to the understanding of the mind of serial killers. FBI profiler John Douglas described Kemper as among the brightest prison inmates he ever interviewed and capable of rare insight for a violent criminal. Kemper is forthcoming about his nature of his crimes and stated that he participated in the interviews to save others like himself from killing. At the end of his murder, No Apparent Motive interview, he said, "There's somebody out there is watching this and hasn't done that, hasn't killed people and wants to, rages inside and struggles with the feeling, or is so sure that they have it under control, they need to talk to somebody about it. Trust somebody enough to sit down and talk about something that isn't a crime. Thinking that way isn't a crime. Doing it isn't just a crime. It's a horrible thing. It doesn't know when to quit, and it can't be stopped easily once it starts." He also conducted an interview with French writer Stephanie Burgoyne in 1991. Kemper was first eligible for parole in 1979. He was denied parole that year, as well as the parole hearings in 1980, 1981, and 1982. He subsequently waived his right to a hearing in 1985. He was denied parole in 1988 hearing, where he said, "Society is not ready in any shape or form for me. I can't fault them for that." He was denied again in 1991 and 1994. He then waived his right to a hearing in 1997 and in 2002. He attended his next hearing in 2007, where he was again denied parole. Prosecutor Adrian Simmons said, "We don't care how much of a model prisoner he is because of the enormity of his crimes." Kemper then waived his right to a hearing again in 2012. He was denied parole in 2017 and is next eligible in 2024. Kemper has influenced many works. This is the part that got me when I found this. Of many works in film and literature. He was the inspiration for the character of Buffalo Bill in Thomas Harris's 1988 novel, The Silence of the Lambs, and its 1991 film adaptation. So this guy was literally the inspiration behind Buffalo Bill. So when people make jokes about Buffalo Bill wearing skin and stuff like that, they're literally reflecting on Kemper. Bill Fayley shoots, like, like Kemper, Bill Fayley shoots his grandparents as a teenager. Dean Koontz cited Kemper as an inspiration for his character Edgar Vest in his 1996 novel Intensity. Let me just tell you, some of the best novels I've ever read have been by Dean Koontz, so I would definitely suggest reading this. The character Patrick Bateman in 2000 film American Psycho mistakenly attributes a quote by Kemper to Ed Gein, saying, "You know what Ed Gein said about the woman? He said, 'When I see a pretty girl walking down the street, I think two things. What a part of me wants to take her out, talk to her, be real nice and sweet, and treat her right. The other part wonders what her head would look like on a stick.'" A direct-to-video horror film loosely based on Kemper's murder, titled Kemper, the Co-Ed Killer, was released in 2008. French author Marc Dugan published a novel, Avenue of the Giants, about Kemper in 2012. Kemper was portrayed by actor Cameron Britton in a 2017 Netflix television series, Mindhunter. Britton received a nomination for the Primetime Emmy Award for Outstanding Guest Actor in a Drama Series because of his role. Extracts from Kemper's interviews have been in numerous songs, including Love Hate by Dystopia, Abomination of Unseen by Devourment, Forever by The Berserker, and Severed Head by Suicide Commando, Crave by Optimum Wound Profile. He's also discussed in many songs such as Edmund Kemper Had a Horrible Temper by Macabre, Fortress by System of the Down, Temper Temper, Mr. Kemper by The Celibate Rifles, Murder by Seabound and California, and Ed Kemper by Church of Misery. At the end, this man literally got exactly what he wanted. He wanted to be famous for being a murderer. And he did. He's in several movies, several interviews, several songs, several novels. He got exactly what he wanted. If you have made it this far, thank you. You are awesome. I love you. This has been Serial Killer Weekly with Cools, and I'll see you next time when we dive into the mind of another serial killer.